Well, in 2006, arguably one of the best rugby finals was played here in Christchurch as the Crusaders beat the Hurricanes 19 points to 12. I say arguably, of course, because it was one of the foggiest nights of Christchurch, and those who were watching could barely see what was happening as it all took place. Those in the commentary box could hardly tell who had the ball, and those watching in the stands would have felt a little bit shortchanged, barring the fact that Canterbury had won. Now, it doesn't happen often, but fog has this uncanny ability to disrupt things. And it's not just rugby finals. If you're driving somewhere in the fog, it will definitely take longer because people are more cautious, they drive slower. If you're planning on flying somewhere on a foggy morning, well, you may not make it because your flight's either going to be delayed or even cancelled if there's fog. And the reason for these disruptions is because fog takes away your ability to see past what's immediately in front of you. And that can be pretty frustrating. We can feel as helpless as the spectator up in the stand, seated high and yet unable to enjoy the game because they could hardly see what was happening. And sometimes in life, our circumstances can be a little bit like fog. There are things that happen in life that disrupt us, undesirable things. We all experienced that in various ways in 2020. All those unexpected changes we had to deal with. It can get to the point where all you can see is fog. You struggle to see past what's immediately in front of you. And as a Christian, when life becomes foggy, it's very easy for us to lose perspective, to lose sight of God and his promises to us, to forget them, to doubt them, or to live based on what we see right in front of us. Well, this morning it's the first Sunday of 2021, and I'm sure we'll all be quick to admit that we have very little idea about what the year ahead will bring. But at some stage, life may well get foggy, if it's not already foggy. As we look at Genesis 21 this morning, I want us to think about this question. How do we live faithfully as Christians when we're impacted by the fog of life? How do we live faithfully as Christians when we're impacted by the fog of life? When life gets complicated, what can we do that will actually help us through the fog? So we'll look at Genesis 21 in a moment, but first let me tell you a little bit about what's been happening in this part of Genesis. Now, in the lead up to today's passage, life has been foggy for Abraham and Sarah. In chapter 12, God had promised Abraham descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, but Sarah hasn't even been able to have one child. What's made things even more foggy is that Sarah was 65 years old when God made this promise to Abraham. Now, as you know, it's pretty much impossible for people at that age to conceive. But then 11 years go by. Sarah is now 76. People her age could be holding their great-grandchildren in their arms. And yet here is Sarah, childless, unable to conceive and weighed down by this reality. God's promise to her 11 years earlier has been clouded by the thick fog of her circumstances. And so a desperate Sarah tries to take matters into her own hands. She takes her maidservant, Hagar. She gives her to Abraham to have a child and try and build a family that way. But of course, that was never going to work. A further 13 years go by and still no child for Sarah. But fortunately for her, God has not forgotten his promise. Sarah is now 89 years old. But God promises that in 1 year, Sarah will conceive a child and he will be called Isaac. Abraham and Sarah laugh when they hear this. And understandably, I mean, when does a 90-year-old ever give birth? And so we come to our passage aware that life is foggy, yet still waiting to see if and how God will keep his promise. So Margaret's going to come up and read the passage now.
Genesis 21, starting at verse 1. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore for him. When his son Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. The child grew and was weaned, and on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking, and she said to Abraham, get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac. The matter distressed Abraham greatly, because it concerned his son. But God said to him, do not be so distressed about the boy and your maidservant. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. I will make the son of the maidservant into a nation also, because he is your offspring. Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He set them on her shoulders and then sent her off with the boy. She went on her way and wandered in the desert of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went off and sat down nearby, about a bow shot away, for she thought, I cannot watch the boy die. And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob. God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer. While he was living in the desert of Paran, his mother got a wife for him from Egypt. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks, Margaret. Do keep that passage open. So the chapter begins with some wonderful news. 25 years after God made this promise, Sarah finally becomes pregnant and has a son. Just imagine Sarah's joy after all that has happened. 25 years of waiting. Numerous moments of doubting God. Other women becoming pregnant around her. People having multiple children. And all the while, Sarah is waiting and wondering whether God will indeed act as he has promised to do. Now, can you imagine the emotional roller coaster that Sarah's been on? The disappointment of every passing month without conception. But now, 25 years on, Sarah conceives, despite her old age, despite Abraham's old age. God has kept his promise. And at this point, the story fast forwards a bit. Isaac's now probably a couple of years old, maybe three, and the time comes for him to be weaned. And so Abraham, he's pretty stoked, and he throws a bit of a weaning party to celebrate his son. Now, as far as I'm aware, people don't really do that these days, but it could just be that I've never been invited. But part of the reason that they might have celebrated was that many children wouldn't actually make it to that age back then. There were higher death rates among infants, and so the fact that Isaac has made it this far is a cause of great celebration for Abraham. His promised descendant has survived, which was a big milestone. But then this is where things start to go wrong. Hagar, who's been out of the limelight for a few chapters, comes back into the picture. And while God has been faithful to his promise, Sarah and Abraham haven't been completely on board the whole time. Hagar's son, Ishmael, is living proof of this. Probably a constant reminder to Sarah of her own failure to trust God. When we were in Sydney, I managed to sneak in a few games of cricket, and in one of the games, I dropped a catch. straight through. It happens from time to time, but the batsman I dropped, he was on zero at the time, and he went on to get 120 runs, and we lost the game. And from that point on, every time that this guy's name was mentioned, I would just remember the time I dropped him and we lost the game. And if I didn't remember, my teammates would quickly remind me. There was just no avoiding it, even after a couple of years. Now imagine every time Sarah sees Hagar or her son, she's reminded of her decision to give another woman to her husband to have a child. So when Sarah sees Hagar's son mocking Isaac, her blood begins to boil. Ishmael's probably 16 or 17 at this stage, and whatever he was doing, Sarah didn't like it. She goes straight to Abraham and she tells him, get rid of the slave woman and her son. She doesn't even use their names. All she says to him is that this woman's son will never share in the inheritance with Isaac. She's furious. And in some ways, it seems completely reasonable. A mother trying to protect her son. You can't really fault Sarah for that. It's a normal, loving thing to do. But the way she does it and the words that she uses are quite telling. The fact that she wants the other boy gone and that she involves Hagar points to this. The fact that she speaks of Isaac's inheritance also says a lot about her intentions. See, God has already promised to bless Sarah and Isaac. Listen to these words in Genesis chapter 17, verse 19. Your wife, Sarah, will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. See, once again, Sarah has failed to take God at his word. In her mind, Hagar and the boy are just these potential obstacles in the way of the blessing that Isaac has been promised. And she can't see past these obstacles, and so she acts. And we can understand that, can't we? Like sometimes waiting on God's promises is hard because they don't always come when we expect or in the way we expect. And then obstacles come up and make it even more hard to take God at his word. This is Sarah's experience. Now, there's some really interesting wordplay going on here in this part of Genesis. I mentioned earlier that just before Sarah gave birth, both Abraham and Sarah laughed at the Lord when he told them that they would have a baby. She laughed to herself when she heard. Then the boy was given the name Isaac, which means he laughs. In verse 6, Sarah says, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. But then in verse 9, this is where Hagar's son seems to be mocking or laughing at Isaac. So let me just recap that for you. Sarah laughs at what God says. Her son is named, he laughs. She acknowledges that God has brought her laughter. She then believes that everyone will now laugh with her since she has borne a son. But her son ends up being laughed at. And she's certainly not laughing at this point. It's pretty ironic, isn't it? But I think all this repetition is here reminding us of the fact that Sarah's initial laughter was because she doubted God's promise. She saw the obstacles right in front of her, not the God who made the promise. Things hadn't gone as she had expected or hoped. She doubted back then, and now she doubts once again. And this leaves Abraham in quite a predicament, a choice between his wife on the one hand or his son Ishmael. It's no wonder he's feeling distressed. It seems like an impossible decision. Like whatever choice he's going to make, there will be negative consequences. But thankfully, amid the fog, God steps in and tells him to do what Sarah has told him. And there's two reasons that God gives that are really important. Firstly, he can send the boy away because it's actually Isaac who's going to be the one who brings Abraham the descendants he had been promised. This is a reference back to Genesis 17, which I just read before. And secondly, he can send them away because Hagar's son will also be made into a great nation. God has already promised it, the reason being that he's also Abraham's offspring. But he's not going to be the main focus going forward. And perhaps that's why Ishmael's name isn't actually mentioned by the author in this chapter at all, in a time where names were so important. So Abraham sends Hagar and the boy away, and sure enough, it doesn't take long before the food and water runs out, and Hagar and her son are left helpless, stuck in the desert with no sustenance. Things have taken a turn for the worst, but amid all this, God intervenes. An angel of God speaks to Hagar and tells her to lift up the boy because God is going to make him into a great nation. The boy isn't going to die. God provides water and is with him as he grows. And his mother even gets him a wife from Egypt, perhaps trying to make sure that he will indeed have some descendants. So there we have it. The fog has well and truly descended. So how do Abraham's, Sarah's, and Hagar's struggles amid the fog of life help us as we navigate the fog that disrupts our lives? As we navigate the things in life that cause us to doubt God's promises. Well, I want to suggest there are three simple things that they teach us that will help us to live faithfully through the fog of life. The first thing is to know that faithfulness amid the fog isn't easy. Faithfulness amid the fog isn't easy. And we've seen that this morning through the characters in the story. Sarah and Abraham struggled to trust God when life got tricky. They were experiencing the consequences of their actions. They failed in the past to trust God's promises of a child because all they could see was the fog immediately before them. And now Sarah was failing to trust God once again by doubting his promise to bless Isaac because she felt threatened by Hagar and her son. And isn't it that often our response when the fog of life descends around us? When things happen that disrupt our lives, it takes our attention away from God's promises. It blurs our vision of God and tempts us to doubt his promises to us. This fog can appear in numerous ways. It can make us feel threatened, and it can cause us to act in ways that dishonor God, that can impact those around us as well. I wonder what the fog in your life has looked like recently. Consequences of past decisions impacting you now. Changes in your life that are leading to stress. A new living situation. Relationship struggles with family or friends. Children who are drifting away from the Lord. Difficulties in your marriage. Health issues for you or your loved ones. Problems at work that are just emotionally draining. When these things confront us, they can overwhelm us. Like fog, sometimes they are all we see. We struggle to see past them. And so it can be hard for us to trust God. Like Hagar sitting there and watching and waiting for her son to die, we can feel helpless. Another reason that we know that faithfulness in the fog is difficult is because Abraham, the father of faith, struggled to be faithful. See, in Genesis, there are numerous examples of Abraham's failures to trust God. He hasn't been faithful all the way through. He slowly had to learn faithfulness. And that should actually encourage us. We have to learn how to live faithfully amid the fog of life. Let's not deceive ourselves that thinking the Christian life is supposed to be easy. So recognize that faithfulness amid the fog is hard. The second thing to do is to look back on God's faithfulness in the past. Look back on God's faithfulness in the past. Many of you probably just want to look forward after last year, and I don't blame you. But looking back on God's past faithfulness will actually help us through the fog. I think that the main reason that this passage is here is to remind God's people of his past faithfulness. It's preparing them for the fog that lay ahead. See, this part of the Bible was originally written to the Israelites who were getting ready to enter into the promised land. And there was going to be a lot of fog around them. Powerful nations opposing them. The temptation to fall back into their sinful ways. It was going to be difficult to live faithfully amid the fog. The temptation to forget God's faithfulness in the past and just see the dire situation before them. There were going to be times where the fog made it hard to see God's plans, hard to see how God would keep his promises. And yet they could know with confidence that God remains unwavering in keeping his promises. His promise to bless Abraham with many descendants and to bless Ishmael. Despite the fog, both these promises are in the process of being kept. And as we gather this morning, we do so knowing that in God's word, we see even more clearly how God has continued to be faithful to his promise to Abraham to give him many descendants. So just over a week ago, we celebrated God's faithfulness through an even more unlikely pregnancy and birth than Isaac's, that of the Lord Jesus, the virgin birth. God keeping his promise to Abraham to bless the world through his descendant, Jesus. We look back and saw God's faithfulness through Jesus, the faithful one, the one who paid the price for the numerous times we stumble and fail through the fog of life, the one whose faithfulness has now restored our relationship with God. When you're struggling through the fog of life, look back and remind yourself of God's faithfulness. The final thing to do is to look forward to God's continued faithfulness. Look forward to God's continued faithfulness. As we gather this morning, we do so knowing that in God's word, we too are given many promises by God, some that we enjoy now and some that we look forward to in the future. Keep your eyes fixed on the faithful one, Christ, who will one day return and bring all of God's promises to fruition. He is faithful. Cling to God's promises through the fog. I've been reminded of this as I think about the changes that Lilia and I will be facing this year. Becoming new parents, starting a new job at a new church. And I have no doubt that at times life will get foggy. All these potential changes make it easy for me to forget God's promises and to feel the effects of the fog of life. It's easy to find myself worrying about how things might turn out, to be weighed down by potential disruptions and the uncertainties that lie ahead. And so I need to remind myself that faithfulness amid the fog is difficult. I need to look back on God's past faithfulness and look forward to God's continued faithfulness, to cling to his promises. One of the best things I did through last year was write down some of the things I'd been praying for. And when Lilia and I were in our two-week quarantine, I read over some of those. And it was just so encouraging seeing the way that God had kept his promises, seeing his faithfulness. Perhaps that's something that might help you through the fog, or maybe you have other ways to remind yourself of God's faithfulness. Well, as we close, I'm going to remind us of some of God's promises to us in other parts of the Bible. Promises spoken to and for his people, in the hope that they will help us to be faithful when the fog of life appears. God continued to keep his promise to Abraham about having descendants. Galatians 3 says, "You are all children of God through faith in Jesus Christ. If you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's seed, heirs according to the promise." Are you feeling burdened by the fog in your life? Matthew 11:28 says this. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Are you feeling anxious? Philippians 4:6-7 says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God." Are you feeling weak? 2 Corinthians 12:9 says this, "My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness." Are you struggling with the messiness of life? Romans 8, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him." Is sin causing the fog in your life? 1 John 1, "If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just and will forgive us." Are you doubting whether God's forgiveness can ever cover over your ongoing struggles with sin? As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. See, these are just some of the many promises that God has kept and will continue to keep. Let me finish with this quote from Charles Spurgeon about the promises of God. The sacred promises, though in themselves most sure and precious, are of no avail for the comfort and sustenance of the soul unless you grasp them by faith, plead them in prayer, expect them by hope, and receive them with gratitude.